This is the 10-Minute Contrarian Podcast. This is VP. We are a solutions-based podcast diving into the world of contrarian investing and alternative finance. You can find us hosted on the No-Nonsense Forex YouTube channel, nononsenseforex.com, and podcast players everywhere. Episode 145 is brought to us by Bybit. This week, I sent a message over to my contacts at Bybit and thanked them because I have not heard one person come to me with any issues that they've had with Bybit. Now, I'm not the person you would come to for problems or complaints, but people still do. And really, in any of my affiliates, I can't even remember the last time somebody came to me. So they are doing a great job. Any issues people have, customer service is solving it, and that means something. That is one of, if not the biggest thing I look for in a broker, is if something ever does go wrong, can they fix it and can they fix it quickly? Now, I'm not allowed to trade with Bybit, but I can only assume that everybody's experience is going really well. People are trading like crazy right now, and if you want to trade like crazy, go down and click the link in the show notes. Read that blog, click the link at the bottom, and get yourself started too, because with Bybit, membership has its rewards. It is the 10-Minute Contrarian Podcast, and I was looking over my spreadsheet yesterday, and it looks like if all stays on schedule, which doesn't always happen, by the way, because you always have these things that pop up, but if we stay on schedule, the next couple episodes after this one are going to be a bit doom and gloomy. Which is fine. People, from what I've seen on my metrics, generally like episodes like that. But I certainly don't want to turn into the doom and gloom podcast because we are not that. We are generally very positive here because we know with things like doom and gloom comes opportunity. And there has not been a bigger opportunity in our lifetimes than crypto. Just about everybody who listens to this podcast got in rather early. And even if you haven't and you get in now, I still think historically you will be quite early. Not financial advice, just an opinion. And I feel, at least when it comes to Bitcoin, that there shouldn't be any doubt left in most people's minds. But I think naturally, as risk-averse as human beings are, there is still going to be some, and that's good. I think that's healthy. However, in this episode, I want to go, well, mostly anti-doom and gloom, and tell you the seven biggest reasons I think Bitcoin has an extremely bright future. And then if anybody's listening to this on YouTube, we do broadcast to YouTube as well. You want to go down below in the comments section and add anything I might have forgotten. Please do. But if the market decides to fall in the future, or we go through some stagnation or something like that, and you want to be reminded of just what a great opportunity this is, and what a great time we're living in right now, come back to this episode. So what I will do is I will give my top seven reasons why I'm extremely bullish on Bitcoin. And then I'll give one, I don't know if it's a bear case, I guess it is, but one kind of word of caution towards the end. You know, the easiest thing about this episode was coming up with seven things. The hardest thing was putting them in a proper order that makes sense for this podcast. So let's go ahead and start with number one. And number one is the worst as far as regulation goes. The one thing that I really thought, the one thing that was preventing me from going heavier into crypto, especially earlier on, was regulation, in particular from the United States, because I knew it was going to be a problem, because I understand the links, especially historically, and we've talked about this on the show before too, that the United States goes to just to keep oil flowing and to keep the dollar, not only the world's reserve currency, but to also keep it very strong. And if all of a sudden, enter stage right, the future of money, which is Bitcoin, that typically doesn't bode well for the dollar long term. So you knew there was going to be a fight. None of anything that has happened with Gary Gensler, Elizabeth Warren, should surprise you. And they're going to keep going. They're not going to stop. But at least as far as Bitcoin goes, it looks like they've pretty much tapped out. You know, they're toothless at this point. And they didn't have really great ammunition to start with. Like, the best they could do was, it's going to boil the oceans. It's going to kill panda bears. Like nobody was dumb enough to believe this. And there's still people out there who believe anything a government official or mainstream media tells them. And even those people weren't buying this. And a lot of those people, because they're no coiners, they wanted to believe this. But it just didn't take. So they've moved on more to blockchain companies as far as their line of fire. And they're doing a little better with that, but not much. Like, it's just a losing battle all the way around. But when it comes to Bitcoin, at least, I think that battle is almost completely over. So the biggest bear case that I had for a very long time is damn near gone. Very blue skies ahead. Reason number two, and we've talked about this, we even had a dedicated episode to this because I think it really is that big. And as obnoxious as I was in that episode, I don't think I emphasized this enough. I really don't. And that is the digital scarcity aspect of it. There will only be 21 million Bitcoin and probably, if we're being honest, more like 16 million available to the public. And now that Bitcoin is on a lot more people's radars, TradFi and those people, they're catching on to this too. They're more aware of this, I think, than they're more conscious of it than your average person would be. Your average person is still very in the dark about this. I've talked to people that still think, you know, Bitcoin's at what, like 69,000 right now. They think they need $69,000 to buy Bitcoin. And they think they're priced out for that reason. Like, this is still where most people probably are. But the people in finance, they do get it. And they're going to want their piece of that pie. The finance world is ruthless. And I think that real crazy land grab frenzy is still to come. But I won't spend too much more time on this one because I already, like I said, we've already done a dedicated episode on that. Go ahead and check it out if you'd like, if you want to get really, really excited. But I want to move on to number three because it kind of branches off of number two, and that's going to be the halving. Now, I was going to have a dedicated episode to the halving, but I was like, I can't even, there's no way I'm going to get 10 minutes worth of material out of this. It is what it is. We've been through it. We know what happens. Now, what will happen to price right before and during and right after the halving? These are stupid narratives, and they don't matter because what really matters is what happens long term with things like this. But it is meaningful, though. Like, what if tomorrow we just end up having half the oil we had before? Or half the copper? Or half the bananas? It would be a really big deal, and it would really be reflected in the price. But you're really burning the candle at both ends here, because not only is there going to be this huge demand for it in that land grab situation I told you about, there's already a demand for it. But on the other end, you're hacking supply by half. The amount we can even create as miners is about to get twice as difficult. I mean, if you understand basic supply and demand even a little bit, this has to be something far beyond anybody's wildest imagination. And it's not a fad. It's not a collectible. This is the future of money we're talking about here. It's wild. Like, I could just stop here. And that should be enough to convince anybody to at least have a little bit of this stocked up. But let's continue on with this, because it all kind of runs along the same theme, right? The whole supply and demand aspect of things. Number four is that, and you guys saw this with me on Twitter, I went from being, you know, kind of cautiously optimistic on Bitcoin to a full-on permabull as soon as those ETFs got approved. That's going to be number four. I tweeted right at about 28,000 Bitcoin that I was buying more, and it's been up only ever since. You all have heard me say on this podcast many times that we need that institutional money to really take that next step forward, and we need a pathway for that to happen, an easy pathway. And now we have it. And not just one, we have 10. 10 ETFs people can choose from mostly very reputable companies. To me, this just ripped the roof right off. You know, they say trees don't grow to the sky. I think this one can. Seriously, contrarians, not only do we have this crazy supply and demand situation, we have removed almost every single barrier in its way. I mean, how can you not be bullish at this point? But all of these things I've been talking about kind of funnels into number five, and that is I can see a real situation. You want to talk about a supply squeeze, where because these ETFs and places like PayPal and Cash App, you know, they have to custody Bitcoin, so they have to go buy it so they can give it to their customers. Well, like we said before, there's only so much out there. So when demand really starts to come, I can see situations to where, you know, maybe like a Franklin Templeton or, you know, some of these smaller ETF issuers, for example, it's going to start with them, but they're not going to have enough Bitcoin to give you. You know, their customers might come up and say, hey, I want 200 Bitcoin and I want to buy it from you. And they just might not have it. You can't create this out of thin air. You can't print it like you can fiat. You can't mine more like you can gold. You can only produce what's there to produce. So just remember I said this. I think we will see a time to where these places that give Bitcoin to their customers just don't have enough to give. And if people want it, but they can't access it, because there's just not enough to give. What does that do to price? It goes bonkers. And if I'm off in any way with this, let me know down below in the comments on YouTube. But I don't think I am. I think this is a very real situation that we could see in the future. I'm not sure if it's near future, mid future, distant future, but I can certainly see it. Now remember, the supply is about to get cut in half again. Where are these places going to get all this Bitcoin from? I'll go ahead and move forward. Number six, and this is, we've also done a dedicated episode to this, and that's going to be the Bitcoin blockchain. Now I don't know what the future of the blockchain on Bitcoin is and all the projects they have going on there, the ordinals and things like that. But I'm kind of done seeing it as any kind of real negative. I think we're, you know, in gambling terms, we're free rolling. Like it's either going to be bullish for the overall ecosystem and for Bitcoin, or it's just going to be nothing. We don't need it, but it is there. Now, right now, everything, a lot of things are still in development. You know, the UX and the UI sucks. And as we've seen with crypto, it usually takes these people a really long time to get a UI or a UX that works, that people actually want to use. I don't know what takes them so long. So I would expect most things on the Bitcoin blockchain to really be a work in progress. But one of the main arguments that they make on that side is that, you know, the world is going to start using blockchain, just like the world adopted the internet long ago. And which blockchain are they going to use? Well, most people are going to go with what they know and trust. And for a lot of people, that's going to be Bitcoin. So if you have a fully built out blockchain with dApps and all this cool stuff on it already, then that's going to be a natural transition for a lot of people. And I think that argument is valid. So just like I said, you know, Bitcoin is the future of money. Blockchain is the future of computing. I think in certain situations, Bitcoin can be both. Like I said, I think it's either going to be a nothing burger or even more bullish. And at this rate, probably not a nothing burger. So finally, at number seven, because this one is kind of separate from everything else, I think. But here on the 10-Minute Contrarian podcast, we know more about money and finance than your average person does, a lot more. But that gap, I think, is starting to close because people are really starting to feel the crunch of a bad economy. And that has woken a lot of people up. You know, back when things are really good and there's no problems, people don't bother to learn about stuff like this. They don't get ahead of things like we do because they can't see it coming because they're not even looking. You know, why would they look? But they are now. And they're looking for solutions. And they're looking to hedge against what they see could be a very bleak future. This was never on the table for most people in the past. But it is now. And, you know, you and I probably both think it's only going to get worse and worse. And when you learn about money and finance and what fiat currency is and what it does, you are going to gravitate towards things like gold and Bitcoin. And for the younger generations, it's mostly going to be Bitcoin. I remember Mark Yusko said it. He goes, I got a young daughter and she will never have a leather wallet. You know, everything is going to be on her phone. I've had a lot of people ask me how, you know, even when it comes to gold, how they can buy gold on the blockchain, because that's just where everything is for them financially. So even the young people who do want gold, that's how they want it. So not only do you have all the nuts and bolts stuff I told you about before, you really have society in general slowly moving this way. Now for you as an investor, do you want to fight these people for Bitcoin once they figure it out? Because when that happens, the price is going to be really, really high. Or would you rather just buy it now? You know, a lot of people just getting into it are like, man, that price is really high. It went up a whole lot. And that turns them off. You know, but what they don't understand is what that price is probably going to be in the future. And given everything I just told you, it's pretty obvious that price is going to be a lot higher, in my opinion. So let's go ahead and hammer out the one, bear case I would make. And this does kind of branch off what I just talked about before with a very uncertain future. And if we do hit a recession, stocks will go down. And if you have ever overlaid the price of Bitcoin to the NASDAQ or even something like NVIDIA or Amazon, the correlations are pretty spooky. You know, they don't go pace for pace with price, but usually when one goes up, the other goes up too, and same when things go down. And this correlation needs to break. Now, it might break. I can certainly see a situation where it does break. I would probably even put the odds that it would break next time we see a real downturn. But I gotta see it first. Because when you have something this correlated, and it does this every time, you have to show me that this is no longer the case. And not only does it have to break, it has to break for a meaningful amount of time. You know, people talk about correlations breaking like 3 or 5 days after the fact. That's not long enough at all. It's silly when people do that. But once I see that correlation break for good, to me, that's the last real barrier in our way. But it still exists for now. But to me, that would be the only bear case really remaining. You know, when the world has to get liquid and dump assets, is Bitcoin going to be one of those things? Is it going to be the first thing out the window? Is it going to be the last thing out the window? We don't know. But overall, contrarians, I am wildly bullish on Bitcoin, which is, it still feels like a crazy thing for me to say. Because even though we deal with asymmetric bets on this show, you guys know I take a very measured and rational approach to things. So for me to be this bullish about something, again, it just feels strange. But the evidence is all there. I can't pretend like it isn't. And it feels crazy to me that so many people don't see it yet. But they will. And they'll find out, too, the people like us were not crazy. We were just early.